This is Ralph Losey, the director and verifier of Echoes of AI, where the podcasters themselves are AI, and they write the podcast, not me.
Welcome back to the Deep Dive. We are going to do something a little different today. We need to shift gears.
A hard shift.
If you've been with us for the last few conversations, we've spent a lot of time treating quantum computers like, you know, tools.
Right. A faster calculator.
Exactly. The ultimate code breaker, the super fast calculator, things you pick up to solve a specific problem, and then you put them back down. But today...
Today, we're looking at what happens when you can't put it down.
When you put the tool down and realize you're actually living inside it.
That is exactly the pivot point.
Yeah.
At a certain scale, technology stops being a device you use and starts being the environment you inhabit.
It becomes infrastructure.
Exactly. Infrastructure. And to really understand what that means for us, and especially for the law, we're breaking down class 4 of Ralph Losey's quantum law course.
And the title of this class, it really sets the stage. Quantum, AI, and the future of legal systems, from tools to infrastructure.
It does.
I have to say, having read through the source material for this one, this feels less like a tech update and, I don't know, or like a warning shot.
It is a warning shot. Mm. A shot across the bow for the entire legal profession. The core thesis here is that we are moving from a world of document-centric law to a world of model-centric law.
Which, on the surface, that sounds like a lot of academic jargon. Model-centric. It sounds, you know, harmless.
It sounds harmless until you're the one getting sued. Mm-hmm. I mean, think about the world we've lived in for centuries. It's document-centric.
Paper trails.
Liability is paper. If you make a bad decision, I can find the memo where you proposed it. I can find the email chain where you approved it.
The classic smoking gun, the thing you wave in court.
Right. But in a model-centric world, the decision isn't made by a person writing a memo. It's made by a simulation, an optimization.
So there's no email.
There is no email. There is no memo. There is just a probability distribution.
That is a terrifying thought for a litigator. You can't cross-examine a probability distribution.
You can try. But it won't answer you. We're going to look at exactly what that does to discovery, to liability, and honestly, to the legitimacy of the courts themselves.
The legitimacy of the courts.
Because as the source material points out, the courts are the fragility point in this entire transition.
Okay. Before we get to the institutional crisis and the collapse of the court system as we know it, we need to understand the engine driving this.
The engine room.
The source material spends a lot of time defining hybrid systems. Now, back in class 2, we covered hybrid encryption.
The two locks on the door.
Right. This isn't that, is it?
No. Completely different concepts. Hybrid encryption is about defense. It's about securing your data. Hybrid computing, which is the focus of class 4, is about raw power.
So how does this engine work? Because I think people hear quantum and they assume the old computers are just, you know, going in the trash.
Not at all. Think of it as a partnership. You have your classical computer, the silicon chips in your laptop. They're fantastic at logic, data ingestion, running the UI.
All the boring stuff.
They handle the boring stuff. Mm. But then you attach a coprocessor, a quantum chip.
And the quantum chip takes the heavy load.
It takes a very specific kind of load, optimization.
I want to bring in the analogy Ralph uses in the course materials because it really made this click for me. The water in the maze.
Oh, yeah.
We touched on it briefly in class 1, but in the context of infrastructure, it hits differently.
It's the best way to visualize the difference. Imagine a classical AI trying to solve a massive logistics problem, say routing 10,000 delivery trucks across a continent during a blizzard.
Okay.
A classical computer is like a mouse in a maze. It runs down a path, hits a wall, turns back, tries another. It's fast, sure, but it's linear.
One by one.
It has to check the paths sequentially.
And the quantum system.
The quantum system is water. You pour water into the maze. It doesn't choose a path. It flows through all paths simultaneously.
It finds the exit instantly.
Instantly. Not by guessing, but by flooding the entire system.
So in a hybrid system, the classical computer builds the maze walls, the rules,
the destinations, the constraints.
And the quantum chip is the water that finds the optimal route.
Precisely. And this isn't science fiction anymore. This is happening now. We see it in logistics, in finance, in power grid management. It lets us solve problems that are mathematically impossible for classical machines.
Because the mouse would take 1,000 years to run the maze.
1,000 years, yes.
Okay, so that's the capability. It's faster, better, stronger. But let's drag this into the courtroom, because this is where the model-centric shift creates real friction.
The disappearing document problem.
Right. The source material lays out a hypothetical about a logistics company that I found really, really stressful just reading it.
Let's walk through it.
Okay, scenario. A massive delivery company uses one of these hybrid systems. A snowstorm hits. The system instantly reroutes global traffic to minimize total financial loss. In doing so, it decides to delay a shipment of critical medical supplies to a hospital chain.
And the hospital sues. Breach of contract, negligence, standard stuff.
So the plaintiff's lawyer sends a discovery request. Show me the documents, show me the email where you decided to deprioritize our medical supplies.
And the defense counsel says,
we lost it.
No, they say, Your Honor, it never existed. And they aren't lying.
Wait, what?
No human sat in a room and decided to screw over the hospital. There was no meeting, there was no memo. The decision emerged from a quantum optimization that balanced 10 million variables.
So decision was just math.
The culprit is just math.
Yeah.
It's water in the maze. And this is why model-centric law is so difficult. Traditional discovery hunts for artifacts, things you can read, things you can hold.
But in this world, you have to audit the system.
You have to.
The notes actually provide a model-centric discovery checklist. I thought this was gold for anyone listening who works in legal. If you can't ask for the email, what do you ask for?
You have to pivot. You stop asking, why did you make this choice? And start asking, how is the system built? Forced you ask for a data lineage.
What the system was trained on.
Exactly. What data did it eat? Was it trained on data that is biased against, say, rural hospitals or hospitals with lower credit ratings?
Okay, so you check the ingredients.
You check the ingredients.
Mm-hmm.
Then you ask for constraints. This is huge. Did the humans tell the system prioritize fuel efficiency above all else?
Ah.
Because if they did and the system delayed medicine to save gas, the liability lives in that constraint.
So you aren't blaming the machine for the decision, you're blaming the humans for the parameters they set.
Exactly. It moves liability upstream.
Hmm.
And finally, you ask for validation. Show me the logs proving this system worked correctly before you turned it on. You're auditing the architecture, not the specific instance.
But even if you audit the architecture, there's another hurdle here that I think is even harder to wrap your head around.
The replay problem.
The death of the replayable decision.
Yes. This challenges the scientific method itself in a way.
So the source gives a financial hypothetical. A bank uses a hybrid system to flag fraud. A regulator comes in 2 years later and says, hey, you missed a really bad trade back in 2024.
Prove to me your system works. Rerun that day's data right now, and let's see if it catches it.
In a classical world, that's totally fair demand.
Of course. If I type 2 + 2 into a calculator today, I get 4. If I do in 10 years, I still get 4. It's deterministic.
But quantum computers are not.
No. They're probabilistic.
Yeah.
If you run the exact same data through the exact same hybrid quantum system today, you will get a statistically similar result, but not an identical one.
You can't step into the same quantum river twice.
You can't. The electron configuration, the quantum state, it's always in flux.
That sounds like a get out of jail free card for the bank. Sorry, regulator, can't reproduce the results. The universe is random. Trust us.
It does sound like that, doesn't it?
Yeah.
The dog ate my homework. But the dog is quantum physics.
So what's the answer?
The source material frames this as a fundamental shift in legal philosophy. We are moving from identity to fidelity.
Identity versus fidelity. Okay, let's break that down because those words matter.
Classical law demands identity. It says, show me the exact same thing happening again.
The replay.
The replay. That's identity. Quantum reality offers fidelity. It says, I can't show you the exact same thing, but I can show you that the process was truthful, that the result falls within the expected error rate, and that the system was behaving properly.
So we're moving from proof of result to proof of process.
We have to. We have to shift to governance. We don't judge the specific output because we can't recreate it. We judge whether the system's parameters were reasonable at the time.
Which brings us to the control loop. This seems to be the lifeline for the lawyer of the future. The source material talks about this as like the new job description.
It is. Think about engineering. A control loop monitors a system. You don't try to control every single valve or every electron manually.
That would be impossible.
Impossible. You monitor the output and you adjust the inputs to keep the system safe.
So the lawyer isn't the one driving the car anymore.
No. The lawyer is the one designing the guardrails. The lawyer's job is to define the parameters. What is an acceptable risk? What are the ethical constraints? What are the legal boundaries?
And then just monitor the loop.
Monitor the loop to make sure the system stays within them.
But if the lawyer is just monitoring and the machine is doing the thinking, who is actually in charge? The source material mentions the fragility point, and it suggests that one institution in particular is going to break first.
The courts.
Why them? Why not the banks or the tech companies?
Think about the speed of adaptation. Private companies move instantly. If the tech saves money, they use it. Government agencies, they're slower, but they adapt. But courts...
They run on precedent.
They run on the past. They run on the idea that a human judge can see the reasoning behind a decision.
There's a hypothetical in the notes about disaster relief that illustrates this perfectly.
Right. Imagine a hurricane hits a coastal region. A government agency uses a quantum AI to allocate emergency funds. It decides to send money to Region A and nothing to Region B.
Region B sues immediately for an emergency injunction.
And the judge asks the obvious question. Why? Why did you leave Region B out to dry?
And the agency says,
because the probabilistic optimization of 10 million variables indicated a 3% higher long-term recovery rate if we focused on Region A.
Wow. Okay. Right. And the judge says, show me the work, explain it to me in plain English so I can decide if it's fair.
And the agency has to say, we can't. It's opaque, it's water in the maze. We can't trace the droplet that made the decision.
That puts the judge in an impossible position.
It does. Think about the judge's dilemma. If the judge strikes it down, they are blocking the most efficient relief tool available. People might die because the money moves slower.
But if they allow it.
They are rubber stamping a black dock they don't understand. That is the fragility point.
If courts cannot legitimize these decisions, if they can't explain why a decision is just, they lose their authority.
Exactly. Legitimacy is the only currency the courts have. If the public feels the courts are just stamping approved on machine decisions they don't understand, the whole system starts to wobble.
Which is why this shift to fidelity and governance isn't just academic. It's the only way to save the judicial system's role in a quantum world.
We have to teach judges how to judge the parameters, not the output. Correct.
Okay, that's the existential dread portion of the deep dive, the institutions are collapsing part. But I want to bring this down to ground level.
Good idea.
The source material lists some very specific compliance traps that are active right now, like today, 2026.
Yes. If you are an HR director, a compliance officer, or just someone in tech listening to this, this is the part where you need to pay attention.
Trap number one. Deemed export. This one actually shocked me because I had no idea how strict it was.
It's an HR nightmare. We usually think of export as shipping a physical box to another country.
Or emailing a blueprint.
Right. But under US regulations, allowing a foreign national employee to access or even visually inspect quantum source code inside a US building counts as an export to their home country.
Wait, visual inspection. So if I hire a brilliant physicist from a country of concern and they walk past a colleague's monitor and just see the code?
You just violated federal export controls.
Yeah.
You just exported that technology to their home country in the eyes of the law.
That is incredibly specific and incredibly hard to police.
It requires technology control plans, or TCPs. You literally have to zone your office based on citizenship. You can walk in this hallway, but not that one. You can look at this screen, but not that one.
High-tech segregation inside the office.
To comply with national security laws, yes.
And trap number two is the flip side, reverse CFIUS.
Correct. Usually, CFIUS, the Committee on Foreign Investment in the United States, checks foreign money coming into the U.S.
to make sure bad actors aren't buying our tech.
Right. But the new regulations, which were effective back in 2025, scrutinize U.S. money going out.
So if I'm a U.S. investor...
If you are a venture capitalist or a company investing in quantum tech in China or other countries of concern, that is now strictly regulated. The government is saying you cannot use American money to build their quantum infrastructure.
So the walls are going up.
The walls are up. Quantum is considered a strategic asset. It's the nuclear power of this century. The days of open, borderless scientific collaboration in this specific field are, they're closing fast.
It really feels like we are walking into a totally different era. We started this talking about tools versus infrastructure. But hearing you describe the export controls, the fragile courts, the disappearing documents, It feels more like we're moving from a solid world to a fluid one.
That's a beautiful way to put it. We are moving from a world of deterministic certainty, where A causes B, and we can prove it on paper, to a world of probabilistic governance, where we manage the flow, but we don't control the droplet.
So looking at the roadmap of this course, class one was understanding the machine. Class two was the threat to secrecy and encryption.
Class three was evidence.
And now class four is the system itself, the infrastructure.
Correct. We've established that the documents are disappearing, the decisions are probabilistic, and the lawyer's job is to manage the control loop.
It feels like we've covered the how and the what, but there's a massive why lurking underneath all this. Every time we talk about probability, you mention that the computer is checking all paths.
There is a deeper question lurking here, and that's where Ralph Luzzi takes us in the final session, class five.
The notes for class five mention the multiverse.
They do. Look, once you accept that computers operate on probability, and that they are accessing solution spaces that classical physics can't explain, you have to ask, where are those solutions coming from? When the water flows to the maze, where is the maze?
Oh, boy.
Class 5 goes beyond the systems to the philosophy of causation itself. It asks whether these probabilities are just math or if they represent actual alternative realities. It connects the legal concept of alternative causation,
which lawyers use all the time.
All the time. It connects that to the physics concept of many worlds.
That sounds like it's going to break my brain.
It might.
Mm-hmm.
But it's the necessary final step.
Mm.
If we are going to govern probability, we have to understand what probability actually is. Is it just a roll of the dice, or is it a window into something else?
Well, I'm ready to have my brain broken, but before we sign off, I want to mention something specific for the listeners who are actually taking this course.
Right.
Because grappling with many worlds and fragile courts is a lot to do alone.
Yes. This is a unique opportunity. Ralph Luzzi, the creator of this material, is offering something he calls a fireside chat.
Now, to be clear, this isn't a lecture. It's not a test.
Well, no.
It's explicitly described as a safe, confidential, fun, informal talk between colleagues.
It's a chance to discuss the questions raised by class four, or the mind-bending theories coming up in class five directly with the source. No easy answers, just discussion.